Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And for the next hour, we will be bringing you our opinion and commentary on the economic and political events of the day. Today is Monday, June 22nd, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too. And it was a happy Monday for gold and us gold bugs, the smart ones in the world anyway. We've got gold up $11.60 today in the New York spot price aftermarket, $1,756. Silver, it was over $18 earlier in the day. Bright and early, it was up. It's now up 11 cents, $17.83. Platinum was up $10 at $821. Palladium was up $40, $1,993. The USDX today was down 0.61 at 97.06. Crude oil is up finally over 40, 85 cents at 40.60. And the paper market today, you have the Dow up 151 points. 26,023, big deal to get it back up over that 26,000 level. The NASDAQ was up 110. It was a big deal to get that up over 10,056. And the S&P was up 20 at 3,118. 10-year yield today was 0.70. It's really been trending at that level for a while. We did the market report today, and there was very little change from one Friday to the next Friday, and here we are at 0.70 again, 0.70%. Asian and European markets, negative. We were negative in early morning trade. I'm not quite sure what actually turned the markets around. Well, there was absolutely no reason for them to turn around, but hey, who knows? It was a Federal Reserve, and we've seen a lot of changes. We've seen the virus cases beginning to tick up. I think people are kind of getting used to that. Everybody's getting used to knowing that there's going to be another giveaway coming from federal government, and it's. New York is beginning to open. They're open for haircuts, outdoor dining, and things like that. I think that's phase two. I'm not sure that's their phase three. But so you're positive numbers for the stock market, and even perhaps there is a little overflow from President Trump's rally, thinking maybe he'll be elected instead of Biden. I can't imagine the markets being strong with Biden in there, but who knows? It's still early. First thing he said he's going to do is cut the corporate tax. President Trump did. He's not going to take it all away. He's just going to cut it back or up it to, I think, what, 28%, which is really no big deal because the multinational corporations can just find loopholes to eliminate that any increase that they might see. So it really doesn't do anything. It sounds good. It's a pitch. It's a political pitch. Mm-hmm. And again, we saw a little bit of the dollar going down today. More and more talk about the dollar being debased. And, of course, this is all good for gold. And, the currency markets are currently facing a multiple cross currents. And, again, as I just mentioned, the fear of a second wave of the virus. Deutsche Bank Shamil Goel says a big question for investors over the U.S. dollars whether it should be trading at a safe haven risk premium as concerns risk over a potential second wave of virus infections. It always cracks me up because here you have Deutsche Bank Shamil Goel, and we've been hearing of Deutsche Bank collapsing for the past 10 years, and by every right, they probably should have collapsed, even with their shares trading below a certain point and so forth and whatnot. But hey, when you're the elite's bank, hey, they're not going to let you fail. They'll let you go on forever and ever. So it was just kind of funny that they're still coming out and people are paying attention. But Samir Goel said that in a potential resurgence of cases, the U.S. dollar could weaken against most of its peers in developed markets, and to an extent, China too. This afternoon, the Singapore time, the U.S. dollar index stood at 97.5 against a basket of its peers, and earlier in June, it was trading at levels below 96.5. Since March, investors have been favoring the dollar over its peers in the group of 10 countries. And again, the emergency dollar demand, I mean, this is typical. Everybody floods to the dollar first. It's not, you know, it's not news. Investors typically go in this to the U.S. dollar. It is the world's reserve currency. It's a quick way to move a lot of money very quickly. But what they're warning about is that emergency dollar demand seems to be waning. Furthermore, the exit strategy for the U.S., if anything, looks poorer than it is for the rest of the world. Asked about the outlook for the Chinese yuan, Goel said that the fundamentals for the currency in terms of the underlying balance of flows are very much getting more favorable. That's for the Chinese currency. Dave.
Yeah, Melody. The onshore Chinese yuan was trading at 7.08 against the dollar this morning, having seen levels around 7.11 earlier in the month. Meanwhile, the yuan's offshore counterpart changed hands at 7.07 per dollar compared to around 7.12 earlier this month. Now, as China opens up more and more of its financial markets and is being included in various indexes and introduces more local currency denominated assets, the portfolio flow story, these are Goel's words, the portfolio flow story incrementally becomes more positive for the yuan. He added, we've seen it, yuan, being relatively sort of stable and within a range, and that's partly to do also with a lot of dividend payments and the fact that obviously, there's a lot of noise along the U.S.-China axis as well, meaning conflict. Of late, we've seen that it feels like at least the Phase 1 trade deal seems largely secure for now. Really, Samir? Relations between the U.S. and China secure? Seems to be they've been strained on several fronts recently. In any event, from the trade war that saw both sides slap punitive tariffs on each other's goods, to technology, to their disagreement over where this virus outbreak came from, Goel also cited the Fed's reaffirmation that it will be keeping interest rates lower for some time to come as it continues to support the financial market. And what he says is that I think all that does is give you a little bit of a window for the yuan to trade stronger versus the dollar, Melody.
Well, I think if any, you know, I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that all this money that's being pumped into these currencies, I mean, it is going to be, you know, they're all going to lose value. And the only thing that is keeping ours aboard is being the reserve currency of choice. You know, it'd be interesting to see if there's the number of transactions. It used to be, Dave, there was 85 to 90% of the world's transactions was done in the U.S. dollar. Be interested to see what that percentage is today. You know, how far that it is dropped. And I'm not even sure if you could find that number or even where to.
We shall search.
You know, begin looking for that number. But, I mean, even if it went from 86% to 84%, that's huge. When you're dealing with the trillions of dollars that are done on a daily basis or an annual basis, so, you know, that's a big deal. We've certainly seen a lot of people selling their and not purchasing treasuries anymore, bonds. governments are cutting back. We've seen the big ones. We've seen Russia. We've seen China. We've seen them all cut back and buying our debt. It's just amazing, Dave. Everybody knows that when you print this kind of money, everybody knows what's going to happen to the dollar. Of course, we went through the Great Recession of 2008. We came close. If it wasn't for our good friends at the Federal Reserve and Goldman Sachs that helped out the government and all the other multi-billionaires that kept it from collapsing.
Here's a, excuse me, Melody, here's a statistic from TheBalance.com from May of this year that says 90% of foreign exchange trading involves the U.S. dollar.
I think it used to be like 95%.
Oh, I'm sure it was higher.
Yeah. So every little percentage drop, it's huge. It doesn't seem like much when you look at the what's 95 to 90 is nothing. Yeah, it is. It's something. And and you know what's interesting? If you look at the, you know, dollar index, it has fallen from a 2020 high of 102.99, almost 103. And that was just late March.
Yeah.
And it fell to 95.7. Now we're back up. And we've seen gold rise almost $300. And we haven't seen anything yet. So tie your shoes, ladies and gentlemen, and buckle up, because there's going to be this is nothing. You hear these financial planners, these analysts, we're going to see $1,800 gold, and you know, maybe we're going to see 19 and 2,000 by the end of the year. That's nothing. That's nothing to what we're going to see.
Time to get in shape.
Time to get it now. And you know what? I'm going to remind you, because you're going to hear people, I hear it already. Well, gold's too expensive. Really? It's really too expensive? How expensive is when you lose 50% of your assets or 70% of your assets? You think gold would be too expensive then? It's all relative to everything else. The higher the price gold rises, the lower the value of the purchasing power. It's not that, what they always say, that it's not the gold price is rising, it's the dollar that's falling. Your purchasing power is declining.
An old friend of mine in higher education had a saying, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Mm-hmm. Well, the semi-corollary of that is, if you think gold is expensive now, wait until it is $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000. You got a bargain on your hands, ladies and gentlemen. Please, please, for your sake and your family's, prepare now. Call us. We'll guide you.
And you know, Dave, when we talk about 3,000 gold and 4,000 gold, people will be buying it, because what other option do you have? Just go back to March when the stock market dropped 10,000 points, 3,000 a day. People would have paid 8,000 then for gold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in a panic. So either you're going to be buying it all the way up is what you're going to do. That's what you should be doing to get rid of those paper dollars, convert it into real money. So, yeah, price for gold, there is no limit. It's not too expensive. And silver is even is a great buy. If you don't have any, they stay with the fundamentals of all. I don't know if this gentleman is listening, and, you know, I'm not making light of your decision, but he wanted to know about copper. He's like, why would you want to buy copper? It's not money. Who's going to buy copper? And I remember when we had that copper crisis where people were going into homes and in new homes and stealing the pipings out of, anything that was made of copper.
I remember in the late 1980s where I was working, we had just transitioned to a whole new computer mainframe. We had no less than 5% of our workforce at the time either stopped in or called saying, "Can I come in and take apart the old computer?" I said, "What? I wanted its copper." Some wanted its gold, but mainly they wanted the copper.
Yeah.
So come on in and go crazy.
And the funny thing is, when you have it, though, it's hard to liquidate. That's why you want to, if you're converting your paper, if you want it as a hobby and you want it as a trinket, that's one thing. But not to invest your hard paper money into. If you're trying to protect your paper money, you need to have gold and you need to have silver. You know, we saw a little bit of our economic activity rebound in May. This is according to the Chicago Fed. The Chicago Fed National Activity Index stood at 2.61 in May, up from a downwardly revised negative 17.89 reading in April. Now, this marks a significant recovery from a record low, and we knew we'd see these types of rebounds. It shows that the economy is expanding as the index stood above the minus 0.35 level that historically has been associated with the periods of economic growth. Everyone was expecting a weaker reading of minus 4.5. Maybe it's the same people who put together this report as the one who put together the jobs report. Or maybe it's the same people. I don't know. The Chicago Fed National Activity Index is composed of 85 economic indicators drawn from four broad categories of data: production, income, employment, unemployment, and hours, personal consumption, housing and sales, orders and inventory. And, of course, a positive index reading corresponds to growth above trend, and a negative index reading corresponds to growth below trend. But we're heading into a break quickly, Dave. Anything else you'd like to add to that?
No, just 57 of the 85 individual indicators made positive contributions to the index in May. 28 still made negative contributions. The overall 72 improved from April to May, while 13 deteriorated.
All righty. Well, we're heading into a break here, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back after these few short ads. 1-800-375-4188. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I just want to make Greg Hunter will be joining us tomorrow.
Hey, Greg.
Greg Hunter will be in. It's been a while. I talked to him last week. I said, you know, Greg, it's been a while since you've been on the program. You know, with all this COVID stuff and viruses and everything like that. And we just kind of, you know,
well, looking at his website, USA Watchdog, he's had several guests on his show the last month. Besides new conspiracy theory abounding, a lot of really bad news coming from his guests about the economy. So that should be an interesting interview you have with Greg.
Yes. And it might be, you know, troubling news, but it really is the reality of things. You know, we can always gloss over and think everything's great. We look around, see things. We look at these numbers. They're getting better. But again, we got a lot of people out of work. But I can't believe, you know, Dave, the PPP program.
Yeah.
So companies had to pay, and I saw that they were going to release some of the people. But I heard that those companies paid the employees the money that they got. They had 60% of it had to go to employees, which baffles me, because then there's another 40% that they just get to use for nothing.
Well, anyway, they had to use for mortgages, rent, utilities. I mean, they were limited.
They're really going to follow up on that. But anyway, 60% had to go for, in order for it to be turned into a grant, 60% of it had to go to employees. So was that employee essentially considered laid off? Or he was just getting paid to do nothing?
My guess is that in most states, they would have been considered at work and employed, not unemployed. And the question I'm less sure of is if they had been unemployed for any period of time because of COVID, and they were then called back to work in order for their employer to qualify for the PPP grant, transition to a grant, that I'm less clear on if they would continue to get the extra $600 a month in the federal pandemic unemployment benefit.
But they were able to get that $600 even though they got paid from their employee? They were able to get both?
The individual may have been then for the period that they were out of work. But once they were called back, once the employer got their PPP money and the employees were called back, or if they were never called off, they were never laid off, then they'd be I'm fairly comfortable in saying that they would be considered employed and not eligible for the unemployment benefit, particularly the state benefit. Again, I'm a little less sure of the $600 enhanced benefit, because I know that just in reading about independent contractors, for example, gig workers, who the $600 and the extension of benefits, unemployment benefits, was geared toward, or at least made them eligible for the first time. If their they've been unemployed for, say, 8 weeks, and they're getting the $600 a week, when the, if and when they're called back, say in Pennsylvania, everyone who hasn't been called back is being called, or at least is eligible to be called back this Friday. Even if they go back, they're still going to get the $600 for the rest of, you know, through the end of July. So wow. interesting stuff.
Wow.
That's why some of these new proposals for a next round of stimulus or relief are suggesting that when it comes to unemployment, that one, the unemployment benefit not be any greater than what an individual employee's salary was prior to their being laid off. Oh, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And a couple of other things that may or may not be relevant. Anyway, that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Existing, and I at first I thought that $600 was a month. I couldn't believe it was $600 a week.
Yep.
No wonder people don't want to go back to work. Hey, mm-hmm. give me $600 a week. $2,500, I'll stay home.
It's $31,200 a year, roughly.
Unbelievable. Wow. Existing home sales. Now, didn't new home sales rise significantly, but now you have existing home sales plummeted in May?
Yes.
Which, you know, I don't know. Sales of existing homes in May fell 9.7% compared with April. This is according to the National Association of Realtors. Sales were down 26.6% annually. This is the largest annual decline since 1982. And that was when interest rates was about 18%. And again, this is also the slowest pace since October of, drumroll, 2010. It's interesting. Perhaps existing homes are just not being put on the market to be purchased. I mean, the inventories.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. I mean, mortgage rates have fallen so low, and then building permits we saw last week, you know, have jumped up. So people maybe they're just using those low rates to refinance.
Yeah, so it is kind of a little bit interesting to see the big to see the big discrepancy between the two. You know, chief economist for Realtors Lawrence Young, he said well into the month of June, he thinks people are more relaxed knowing that there is a massive stimulus package in the economy. Well, so I mean, he's thinking that these buyers are going to be coming back and the listings are going to be coming back too, which makes sense. I mean, if you're existing homes, I wouldn't want anybody traipsing through my house during a pandemic, whether you know, believe it or not. I still wouldn't want people traipsing through my house, depending on how bad you needed to sell it. And here's the catch, and what I thought was inventories fell 19%. So
there you go. Well, you know, tight supply kept pressure on those home prices. Median price of an existing home sold in May was just south of $285,000, an increase of 2.3% compared with last year, and the smallest annualized rise since February of 2012, of course, when the market had just begun to recover from the Great Recession. Melody.
I think that's enough on that. Here's something that we talk about a long time, and that's the buybacks.
Yeah.
And there's some people, there's some economists, I think there was a politician or two who said that they should cancel, they should stop buybacks. Economist Jim O'Neill, of course, formerly of the too big to fail Goldman Sachs, said that the recession has highlighted inequalities in the workforce and created an opportunity for governments and companies to address broader social scales But Goldman Sachs is probably the biggest culprit of helping corporations buy back their shares. But hey.
He got out. He got out after he left his mark.
Yeah. Yeah, so now we should listen to him. He says the whole role of share buybacks and the way the companies so dramatically are focused or managing their balance sheets, for example, he thinks that could become a bit a thing of the past. He said investors have been increasingly putting their money into funds and companies that prioritize environmental, social, and governance, also known as ESGs, issues in recent years. I don't know what he's really saying, Dave. He's not really saying much of anything except that he thinks it's more than just an outright obsession with maximization of profit and playing their own role in trying to deal with some societal changes. So they just need to go back and forget about dealing with societal changes. They're part of the problem. Go ahead.
Well, he also said that governments that have taken stakes in corporations to keep them afloat during the economic crisis now have a unique opportunity to shape those companies' operations. You and I have talked about that topic in terms of just how far government should be able to go using whatever leverage it may have. He says airlines, for example,
governments shouldn't be in there, period.
Well, he says airlines could be required to commit to reducing carbon emissions in order to receive government loans, grants, or investments. And in any event, regardless of how you feel, he says this crisis gives governments a chance to do that if they want to.
Let's just go ahead and nationalize everything. Just give away. It's just... They pull on the heartstrings of environmental and all of this other stuff. It's just keep government out of business. That's where our problem came along to begin with. Anyway. So I don't get why he's saying that there should be a cutback in buyouts, buybacks.
Well, he says that money should be put to better use. For the good of, say, the environment. That's what I took out of it.
Okay. I agree, and buybacks should be stopped. Now, if he would have came out and said, bottom line is they should be stopped because it's not real. That makes the stock market a very, it truly is a gambling casino. It's manipulated, and they're proud of it, and they'll come out and tell you. And that's what should be stopped, just for the legality of it, instead of manipulating the markets and manipulating people and everything else. If you want to talk about correcting societal, having a change in society, how about that? How about doing things rightly and forget all this inside trading and all this and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, what's next? What's next, Dave? Pick something.
Well, how about picking stocks is a risky business?
If you own gold, you don't have to pick stocks, right?
There you go. That's actually the moral of this article. Some people find Dave Portnoy's live stream stock trading, where he picks stocks by pulling Scrabble pieces from a bag to choose the ticker of his next purchase. They find that entertaining. Of course, most people would rightly say, it's a pretty bad way to invest your money. Other people who consider themselves clever might say there's no way to know which stocks will do better than others, and that given efficient markets theory, such an approach is just as likely to do well as anything else. But it turns out that's just simply wrong. Picking stocks via a Scrabble bag is indeed risky, and the reason is it turns out that most stocks are indeed bad. A 2017 study by Hendrik Bessenbinder of Arizona State University looked at every listed stock, Melody, between 1926 and 2016, and found that 4 out of 7 actually performed worse than treasuries over that period. He also found that the most common outcome for a stock is a complete 100% loss.
Wow.
And even more astoundingly, he concludes that the entire net gain the stock market since 1926 can be attributed to just 4% of all stocks.
Oh my gosh.
In today's world, that would mean roughly 175 publicly listed companies in the U.S. out of a total of around 4,400 in existence at the end of 2018. That number's come down a little bit since then, too.
Wow, that's amazing. That's yeah. Those are some pretty strong.
Yeah, that is interesting stuff. I mean, the bottom line in that is, you know, most stocks are bad, and if you pick them randomly, you're personally going to regret it. But beyond that, we have a simple, straightforward solution, as you said. Call us, 1-800-375-4188. We'll give you 10 good reasons to invest in the safe haven of gold today.
Let's see. Let's go ahead and talk about... what do we want to talk about? Didn't you have something in there you wanted to talk about, your newsletter article? How
yeah.
banks are awash in new cash?
Yeah, we ought to do that the third segment.
We could go ahead and start that and then finish. We only have a minute, so let's go ahead and start that.
Okay, then. Well, let me get to it.
Well, it was about the Neil Kashkari that he is warning banks to stop paying dividends and raise capital to inoculate themselves from the ongoing crisis.
That's true. As too big to fail banks, credit losses continue to escalate amid consumers struggling to pay their loans. Kashkari warns that long-term losses could cause significant problems. He said, "I'm concerned the longer this goes on, the more losses banks will face. Large banks have more capital than they had before the 08 crisis, but not enough." Now, his comments come as the Fed gets ready to release the results of a stress test this week. As many listeners know, those reports examine whether or not banks have enough cash to cover losses such as missed mortgage payments, while also paying out dividends to shareholders during a prolonged economic downturn.
We're going to talk a little bit more about banks are awash in new cash. So when we return, please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Going into the break, we were talking about how banks are awash in new cash. That's kind of interesting. And but is it enough? Cash Carry says it's not enough. They might have more, but they don't have enough, Dave.
Yeah, that's well, that may be up for debate. I mean, we know last week the Fed's Vice Chair for Supervision, Randall Quarles, suggested that banks may see their dividends or even a portion of their company earnings affected by this upcoming stress test report. Just last month, we talked about a Fed economist warning that cracks could emerge in financial markets and vibrate throughout the economy broadly. They already are. Now, that report, which we talked about in this program, concluded that financial institutions, which had large capital and liquidity buffers before the shock, may experience strains as a result. Cash Carry also said the recovery from the current recession will take longer than we had hoped only a few months ago, and believes that it'll take a long time for the labor market to recover. He said people who've lost their jobs will need further help so they can pay their bills. If they can't, will not only hurt them, but the economy as a whole. When they're not busy buying up trillions and trillions of dollars in bonds and treasuries, they're just encouraging Congress to spend it. Now, he's one who... you and I talked in break. He suggested a form of enhanced unemployment insurance capped at an employee's prior wage, which would eliminate any disincentive to return to work when it's safe. Of course, the current program, which gives unemployed Americans an extra $600 to their unemployment benefits, ends. That's a week. Ends July 31st.
Didn't the Dallas Fed President Kaplan just last week suggest that record unemployment had bottomed out?
Yeah, gosh, I don't know what he was looking at, but...
the report that we got.
There you go. I mean, it just, again, is this aggressive optimism that you mentioned in the first segment that just isn't realistic. I mean, he did, yeah. Cash Carry, though, predicted if a second wave hits later this year, the unemployment rate will almost certainly climb again. More importantly, he added, I think the real number today is around 20%. Now, to me, that was a surprising moment of candor, unless it was a slip of the tongue. The official headline, or U3 jobless rate, reported by the Labor Department is 13.3%. which economists like Cash Carry have suggested may not reflect reality. Indeed, we agree that it doesn't, not even close. Nor does John Williams of ShadowStats.com, whose own methodology, which includes short and long-term discouraged workers, suggests the actual jobless rate right now is at least 34%.
You know, you write that Cash Carry's flashing signs come despite a reported $2 trillion surge in cash that was deposited in accounts of U.S. banks since January. Where'd the $2 trillion come from? Everybody's not working.
Oh, stimulus.
Oh, geez.
Stimulus, all driven by the Fed, Congress, of course, business and taxpayers' responses. Of course, government has already printed an extra couple of trillion dollars so far this year. At the same time, the Fed has begun a slew of efforts to support the financial markets, primarily the stock market and its shareholders, including an unlimited corporate and a new municipal bond buying program. And an uncertain future is prompting decision makers from two-person households to multinational corporations to hoard cash, a lot of it. More than two-thirds of the 2020 deposit gains that you mentioned have gone to the 25 biggest institutions, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Citigroup. In fact, the largest U.S. banks by assets grew a lot faster than the rest of the industry in the first quarter. Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan said that checking accounts with balances below $5,000 actually had up to 40% more in them than before all this craziness started.
And you know, I hear a lot of people, I don't know how much this is moves up in the dollars that they're holding on the side, but I hear more and more people who are holding cash.
Yeah.
And folks, during the Great Depression, cash was king. But it was backed by gold. Today, cash is backed by debt. It's not real money. And that's what you're going to lose. So whether you keep your money in the stock market, whether you keep it in cash, you're going to lose unless you offset it into real money, and that is gold, gold and silver. So just because you think you're sitting there on cash that you thought you were pretty smart getting it out of the stock market, you were thinking, but don't keep it all in cash because you'll just lose it. You'll lose the purchasing power of that dollar. And so your article cautions that if the deposit boom is merely just one sign of the many steps that have been to mitigate the effects of this recession, which we've been said we were in since February, right, Dave? We were in this great recession since February. It remains to be seen what the ultimate outcomes are for the government's historic spending spree.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, some experts already foresee a collapse in the U.S. dollar. We talked about that at the top of the program, plus higher inflation, if not hyperinflation. Others certainly see the stock market bubble in the making. One consequence for those who've been able to step up their savings will be more immediate. Banks are almost certain to lower their already near zero interest rates. Since anyway, it doesn't look like they need any more of our money.
No. No.
Yep. I mean, prepare, ladies and gentlemen. Just prepare.
We're going to start traveling around the world a little bit in the last 10 minutes of the program. President Trump today walked back some comments that he would consider meeting Nicolas Maduro, saying that he would only do so to discuss the Venezuelan president's departure from office. Trump said he would consider meeting Maduro and play down his earlier decision to recognize opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuela's legitimate leader. On Friday, President Trump said he was open to a meeting, a move that would upend his maximum pressure campaign aimed at ousting Maduro. And interview, he said, I would maybe think about that. Maduro would like to meet, and I'm never opposed to a meeting, but at this moment, I've turned them down. So.
How would you like to have been a fly in the wall in Maduro's office when he heard Trump say, well, I'll talk about his departure. Oh, my word. Oh, don't tick off a dictator.
Oh. Yeah, well, but Maduro is kind of doesn't have a whole lot of power, but people he's doing business with does.
He's still there. Thank you, Putin, I think, for the most part.
Yep. So, you betcha. And, you know, I wanted just to go back. We're going to talk about India's recession, but ours started, the United States started in February, but the pandemic really didn't start until March, really the end of March, when people were really starting to shut down and everything, mid to end of March. So So we were actually in one really before Dave.
It's an interesting perspective. As we had said in the months leading up to this year, all the flashing signs right before us.
Yes.
And as it turns out, they were flashing for a reason.
Yes, they were. And they're flashing for India. They're looking at their first recession in four decades. Hmm. I find that hard to believe.
I know. How about it?
You know. Of course, if you don't do anything, you're always... I don't know if you're always living in a depression, and maybe a recession is just a step up from a depression, if you know what I mean. If it's, you know, because you just think of it as such a poor country, and I guess you have to really do something in order to go into a recession. So if you look at it that way, this is a good thing. That means they're getting economically better in order to put them in a recession. That's the optimist view. Mm-hmm. Anyway, staring at its first recession in four decades, India faces a long, hard slog to regain its former glory days of 8% plus growth. It emerges from the world's strictest stay-at-home rules. Asia's third largest economy finds local supply chains broken, little demand for its goods in overseas markets, and an escalation of a border dispute with its giant neighbor China. All of those bode ill for Prime Minister Modi's vision to transform India into a $5 trillion economy over the next 5 years and $2.7 trillion currently, and make it more attractive to foreign investors. Millions of Indians have lost their jobs since the lockdown. But again, that was imposed in late March. Many migrants... who make up nearly a fifth of the workforce and are key to building its cities and running factories, they all fled their former villages. So, and they're very unlikely to return in a hurry. So again, that puts the output at India's production lines. It's not going to be restored before September at the earliest. Already the supply chain here in the United States trying to find certain things and so forth. It's not getting to the shelves. We're not getting it in. People can't buy it. So this is just one place where the supply chain is being disrupted, Dave.
Indeed. We read that Modi's government has reached out to more than 1,000 companies in the U.S. and through overseas missions with incentives for manufacturers. Those companies include medical equipment producers, food processors, apparel, leather, and auto part makers. But the plans to brighten India's investment allure have run into more headwinds, not the least of which is because of this two-month military standoff between India and its fellow nuclear armed power, China, which flared up and has stoked geopolitical tensions as recently as a week ago. Now, while India has said it remains committed to peace, an escalation there risks even more bumps for firms from Alibaba to Xiaomi to Tata Motors, and probably will spur companies to rewrite, yes, their supply track packs. Swaths of Indian businesses also rely on raw materials from China, and another bout of disruption can only prolong India's recovery, Melody.
Well, you know, I don't know what's going on with North Korea, but they're dropping. It's like, say, what? He was in hiding for 2 months, and now he's come out. What was he doing for those 2 months? Doing all these creative...
Looks like he was drawing.
Yes, he was. They've been his printing shops have been working overtime to revive a favorite weapon of Cold War era psychological warfare, sending millions of propaganda leaflets across the world's most heavily armed border and scattering them over South Korea. The tit-for-tat move was announced today by the North, which has become incensed by the leaflets that defectors from the North have sent from the South to their communist home country in recent months. The pledge by the North to retaliate presents another threat to the fragile Dante of the Korean Peninsula. North Korea says it was preparing 3,000 balloons to carry the leaflets across the border. Jeez. And, of course, we're going to include cigarette butts and other trash.
Ew.
But you know what's interesting, though, too? He came out and they North Korea threatened sensational event to end America.
Oh, wow.
And that was a statement from North Korea's embassy in Moscow, observing the 70th anniversary of the still ongoing Korean War this weekend, threatened a sensational event leading to the destruction of the United States.
Wow.
I mean, they have routinely threatened nuclear attacks on America for, you know, pretty much the past decade. It peaked in intensity around 2016, 2017. Pyongyang's communist regime issued many of those threats in forms of videos simulating nuclear attacks on D.C. and other major American cities. I remember seeing those. Following its most recent nuclear attack in September 2017, however, the United Nations approved a strict sanctions on North Korea that have crippled its economy and apparently limited its ability to threaten free states. Mm. I guess that was its most recent threat. Mm. Of a nuclear attack. So it's kind of interesting. All of a sudden, you know, he's flexing his muscles again. A new round of the Korean War will add a particularly sensational event to the history of mankind, which will put an end to another empire whose name is the United States.
Melody, I sense another round of love letters coming.
Perhaps. The first ones didn't work. Try again. We're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. Greg Hunter will be joining us, so make sure you tune in. I want to thank you for joining us today. So until then, be safe. Good night and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's too bad.